This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of February 18th, 2019. I'm Mason King. This week, we are in... Greg, how do we describe this exactly?
We're in Studio C. It's a culinary studio. That's what the C stands for. And I would say it's like a glorified chef's table. You're going to be dining in the kitchen, and I'm going to be cooking in the dining room. So you can see we're sitting here looking at the equipment. I've got a small little kitchen set up, and the only thing I've built in this room is this wall right here and hung the hood. So the rest of this is just one big open space, hence the studio feel. And so then we'll have a couple of tables over here that we'll sit up to, I'm guessing, probably 16 or so. So what we'd like to do here is host private events, you know, just small dinner parties for people who are celebrating or just who want to get together and have a good time.
So before we get too far, I am with Greg Hardesty, who for a lot of our Indianapolis listeners doesn't require much introduction. For close to 20 years, Greg has been one of the city's best-known chefs, one of its most successful restaurateurs. He's a five-time James Beard?
I believe it is five times, yes.
Foundation regional semifinalist?
I've read four times sometimes, and I'm not quite sure which one's correct, so it's either four or five.
He certainly is worth five. He's been responsible for some of our most highly regarded and trend-setting restaurants. You remember Elements on Mass Ave, H2O Sushi east of Rodripple, and most recently Recess at 49th and College. And he's been working for several months on this. It's a new project called Studio C, which will open within a few days. We're here to talk about that, as well as what you've been up to over the last couple of years.
Right.
And thanks for having me over.
Oh, thanks for coming.
Great. So let's dive right in. So Recess closed in February 2017 after 7 years.
7 years,
I believe.
Yeah.
Yep. And I have a sense of this, but tell me why you decided to close Recess.
Primarily, I was burnt out. You know, I'd been going since 1992 pretty much nonstop in the food industry, and I just hit a point in my life where I was missing too much of the outside world, and I was just burnt out. I was no longer having fun cooking. It became a job, and that's when I knew it was time to get out. So
I would think that you know, with all the work that goes into creating a restaurant, you'd feel that after 1 year. How do you get 7 years into that?
It's a good question, because I would say I felt that way for the last 2.5, 3 years.
Oh,
so
okay.
The first five, you know, it was good. You know, Recess opened with a lot of sort of heartache, and there was a lot of weird things that happened around the time when we opened Recess. So that beginning first year and a half was kind of rough for me. You know, just there was a lot of freak accidents with friends of mine that just kind of took away from the fun. And they were all associated with the restaurant in some way, whether they were going to work for me or whether it was just a great customer or vendors, just some really odd stuff happening. So,
okay, not heartache related to the restaurant, but the outside.
No, friends where we needed to throw fundraisers for people. You know, I knew two people who got paralyzed within about 3 months of each other. Another vendor who died, another vendor who got struck by lightning. My best friend got cancer. It was really odd. I was experiencing this wonderful restaurant, my dream restaurant, and there was just this little bit of level of discontent the whole time, because it was, I just couldn't feel the joy of it without feeling a little guilt. So it was a rough beginning, but then we settled in, and you know, around the Super Bowl time, we really were hitting our stride, and we really had a great time that year. And so it was just more or less burnout.
Sure. Yeah. Was there a moment we really clicked and said, okay, I need to close?
Not really. No, it was something that I had been working on for probably 6 or 8 months, you know, in my head. You never want to close, because there's people dependent on you for their livings and everything. And you know, I've opened four restaurants, if you call room four the fourth restaurant. And
that was next door.
That was next door, yeah. But yeah. I had to put a kitchen in and all that. So, yeah. You know, it was like building four restaurants. So this is my fourth, or that was my fourth. That's why it was called room four. It was the fourth room. yeah, it was tough. You know, and I was just burnt out.
Yeah. What is it about running a restaurant that you personally find the most untenable?
Probably the most difficult, and you'd probably ask any chef or any restaurateur, or really anybody that owns a small business, and it's usually the employees. It's the employee relations. You know, everybody has issues. I have my own issues. I have stuff going on at home, and those become, you know, part of the fabric of the restaurant, and then, that you know, you have to deal with those things. And unfortunately, in the restaurant business, the show goes on every single night. We can't lock the door and put a sign on it that says, hey, such and such had a bad day and we're not open, you know, so we go on regardless. And so you know, the employees were, and then money issues, you know, it's owning a small business is a struggle, and the ups and downs financially, you know, 1 month you'd be great and the next month you're, you know, $5,000 in the hole. So that cash flow is always a stressor. But I would say overall, you know, it's dealing with multiple employees and trying to maintain the level of food that I was trying to do.
Yeah. And give the quick 20-second elevator pitch for what Recess was exactly.
Recess was a pre-fee menu. Basically, I was inviting you into my home. I lived there for God's sakes. And so, you know, I was inviting you to come into my home and have dinner with me. And that's how I wrote the menu every day.
Yeah, and fairly limited menu, 5 or 6 different options.
Right. And usually, you know, if I ever put anything on there kind of crazy, it would be a supplemental or a choice. You know, I never wanted to force people to eat, you know, organ meats and that sort of thing. You know, those were always extras and not something that I would force you to eat. So, yeah, in a nutshell. Pre-fee menu in my home.
So when you look out over the 7 years, what stands out in your head as maybe a favorite moment or the thing you're most proud of?
Yeah. I mean, I think bar none, the thing I'm most proud of about my whole career is all the people who've worked with me along the way and have gone on to do their own things. You know, there are several chefs here in town that own their own restaurants, but there's a lot of chefs that are just working out there, you know, that aren't getting all the applause that some of them are getting. But I'm proud of all of them, and I couldn't be where I'm at, you know, without them. You know, people always ask me, are you get upset when people move on and do their own thing? And I say, no, not really, because if I didn't have them, I wasn't going to have a good restaurant myself. Mm-hmm. So it's the only way you can do it is to have good people around you.
I hate to drop names, but let's just real quick mention a few of them so folks know who we're talking about.
You know, Abby Maris there at Bluebeard, John Brooks at Beholder and Milktooth, Eli Laidlaw's down at the Alexander. Just off the top of my head, I've got a friend in Chicago who owns a restaurant called Real Chicago. His name's Nick Schmuck. But there's just several guys out there, you know, that have done great work, and I'm proud of them all, like I said.
Is there something about working for you that brings out the entrepreneur in the chef?
I don't know, because I don't think I ever made it look easy to any of them. You know, I was always screaming and bitching. So, no, not really. I think it's any chef that has that drive to do it themselves and to want to own it someday. I can't imagine too many people getting in this business and not wanting to own it. But just there's something about that goal that I think everybody strives for.
Now, if you had not felt burnout, could you have continued? Were you still profitable?
It was still a running restaurant. You know, it was working. I'm not saying that it was working perfectly. With my burnout came a lot of difficulties just in the daily lives. You know, I could have made it easier. I certainly was part of the problem. But yeah, it could have went on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know anything about the restaurant business. Why not just sell the restaurant?
Well, that's exactly what I did, actually. I had what I would call an asset sale. I sold all the assets in there to Neil Brown. That's another one that I didn't mention, Neil Brown. Sorry, Neil. And he opened Ukiyo in the same space. And all the equipment in Ukiyo was mine. I mean, I think he's added some stuff. So I basically sold. I wasn't selling the business. I was selling the assets. And a big part of that was the liquor license. I sold that, and those are tough to come by. So that was probably, you know, half the sale right there.
Okay. So that made more sense than just trying to sell the business.
Yeah, and I contacted Neil. I said, hey, look, I know you're looking at a space downtown, and I don't know what your costs are involved, but I think you could do this for a lot cheaper if you considered this. And luckily, it worked out for both of us. So I think it was a win-win for both of us and the city.
So the February 2017, you're done. What are the next couple of months like?
Just sort of relaxing, clearing my head. I took a couple of months off. I really did nothing. I just sort of enjoyed being at home, being with my daughters and my wife, and just trying to live a normal life. And I knew I was lucky. I knew I had a job waiting for me with Fisher Farms, which I did for a year and a half. I was a sales rep.
Oh, was that right?
Literally the day that it came out in the press that I was selling Recess or was going to close Recess, Dave Fisher happened to be in town doing his sales job, you know, what he does. But he's also the farmer and the owner of the company, so he doesn't have a whole lot of time. So he came to me that day and said, you know, I've been waiting for this, and you know, I'd love to have you come on and be my first sales rep that I've ever had. So it worked out really well. So that first 2 months was a real blessing to know you had something to fall back on. I wasn't there, that stress wasn't there.
And for folks who aren't familiar with Fisher Farm, but might be if they knew what it was, what is it?
Fisher Farms is the, you know, in my opinion, the premier beef in Indiana, and I would put it up against any beef in the country. It's just wonderful. It's down in Jasper, Indiana. They raise beef and pork. All natural, just a wonderful company. And I used them for about 10 or 12 years before I started working for them. So it was just a great relationship for us both.
What did you like about being a sales rep?
You know, I had a hard time the whole time, really. I don't know that I ever got over the fact that I needed something that had results at the end of the day. You know, I'm so programmed to have a prep list. I perform that prep list. We open, we serve, we close, and we're done, and we start over. Results, sometimes good, sometimes bad. I missed that sort of action with the sales job, but I did enjoy, you know, it kept me connected to the restaurant community, and I was going in kitchens and talking to chefs, and it just kept me sort of in the loop and what was going on, and that's what I enjoyed most about it.
And I think you also did some consulting as well?
Yeah, I did some consulting work for Spoken Steel. I did that for 12 months.
And that's downtown in
downtown, Le Meridian Hotel.
Oh, right.
Used to be the Canterbury.
Right.
Yep. And went in there, helped them hire a chef, changed the menus, and really just sort of overall changed the culture a little bit. You know, they wanted to get just a little bit more consistency, and just we just simplified the menu. You know, I tried to make it, you know, approachable, and they're in a tough situation down there because they're in a hotel, and everybody knows that it's a hotel restaurant, but it's run separately, and it really is a wonderful place. And I think, you know, I'm proud of the work we got done there.
And did that experience and experience of being a consultant help convince you that, you know, I do need to be back in some way, shape, or form in helping produce food for people?
I think this whole Studio C idea has been in my head for over a year and a half. You know, I really started thinking about it pretty soon after. I didn't really let that be known, just since I was so bold and saying, oh, I'm walking away, I'm never coming back, you know, never say never. But I think, that was it. So
okay, so because it's so unusual, I want to read a description of Studio C that one of our reporters has put together.
All right, I'd love to hear it, because I'd like to know what we're doing too. I'm still up in the air.
Her interpretation of the idea is this. Okay, Studio C will include private dining, a coffee bar, pop-up meals, and possibly other offerings from cooking classes and tasting sessions to a wine of the month club, and a place that will supply home chefs with hard-to-find ingredients.
I love it.
That's good?
That's pretty much, yeah.
Would you like to do that?
Yeah, and those are all things that I would like to offer, you know, and I'm realistic to probably think or to realize that I probably can't do all of those on a daily basis. Those are all ideas that I think that I would like to have as a consumer. So I'm going to kind of throw them out there and see which ones stick. I'm interested in all of those things, so none of them sound bad to me. The procurement side, and that's where for the home cooks, that's the part that really excites me, especially with seafood. You know, it's really tough to get good seafood, and you primarily see the same six or eight things in any seafood market. So I would love to be here available for people to call, and I want to start a conversation with the city, and I want them to call me and say, you know, I'm looking for this, or I'm looking for this kind of fish, and I want to go find it for them, charge a small fee for doing that. But, you know, if it's a one-time meal, and everybody's cooking on, you know, watching the Food Network, and everybody's into food now, and it's awesome. You know, it's really helped the industry grow. And so I'd like to have sort of a procurement thing for seafood, and we can do that with Fisher Farms, you know, exotic ingredients, you know, just stuff that's tough to find, but I know people see things and they want to try them, and so I'd love to help them with that.
But to be clear, this is not, what it is not, is a traditional restaurant. I can't roll up here on any night of the week and say, cook me something.
Correct. It's not going to do that, but she said some pop-up dinners. When I don't have a private event booked, within a day or two's notice, or I'll give a day or two's notice, I might say, you know, on Thursday we're going to have 18 seats available. So I'll run it like a little tiny restaurant then, you know, and we'll book reservations and times, and we'll try to space it so that we do it properly, and just me cooking. So we'll see if I can keep up with that. Maybe it's only on Thursday we're going to do 6 or 8 people because maybe that's all I can handle at this time. That's still the big unanswered question is how much can I really do? So
tell me about the opening. Is it next week?
Yeah,
for our podcast listeners, it will be this week.
Yeah, I'm shooting for the 19th, and I'm shooting for the 19th, ironically, because I close recess on February 19th of 2017.
Oh my gosh!
I thought, you know, what a great way to start a new one, you know, end one and start one on the same day. So that's what we're shooting for. And at this point, right now, we just have some VIPs, but we're going to open up. What we're going to do for a week is have some tasting events. And so what I want to do is to be able to get as many people in here for the first week or two. And we may do this for 2 weeks, these tasting events. But we'll have about 12 to 14 people in a night. And it'll be like a small wine dinner, only the courses will be a little smaller, a little quicker, and a little less expensive, obviously. So we're just going to try to get some people in, have a question and answer session. I think when you see the space, it makes a little bit more sense. When you see where the coffee is, you see where the table is, you see the kitchen, I think it all starts to make sense. And that's my goal for these opening parties.
How big of a staff do you have?
One person and myself. So actually two, I take that back. I have someone that's going to work with the coffee in the mornings, and then myself, and then my general manager, Frankie Figueroa. She's a gal I met about 4 months ago. And we just have sort of put this thing together piece by piece together. So that's the crew at Studio C.
So when you think about this, as you think ahead over the next 6 months, does this feel more relaxing to you than if you just decided to say, I'm going to open a small restaurant?
Yeah, I think so. I'm going into this one in a much better place. Just, you know, these 2 years have been really a great hiatus for me to just work on myself personally. So I'm in a much better place, healthy-wise, mentally, to come into this. And my goal here is to enjoy it, to get back to cooking. And that's what I missed. That's what I realized I missed. And this is, you know, my fifth project. And it's, for whatever reason, I seem to be getting smaller. Every other chef seems to add restaurants and get bigger. For whatever reason, I tend to be going in the other direction, and I'm not sure what that's about, but I'm in search of something, and hopefully this one.
Let me ask you about the coffee real quick.
Okay.
Because my wife is self-employed, and she loves to drive around and work in different places. Can she come here in the morning and get coffee and like set up her laptop, or is it not that kind of
place? It's just an express coffee.
Okay.
So it's just carry out.
Okay. But I can't come in and grab
your coffee. Absolutely. It's 6:30 to 3:30 daily. That's what we're starting with the hours. You know, we could extend or decrease those as needed, but that's what we're doing for now. And it's a service. You know, it's not a coffee shop, and I'm not going to make a living doing this, but I have the space. I love coffee, and I just saw a need for it here in Broad Ripple. And I'm also a guy who doesn't like to stand in line and wait for everybody to get their blender drinks and their espressos and all that. So what we're going to do is just concentrate on trying to get a really great cup of coffee in a quality cup, get you in and out fast so you can be on your way. That's
what our goal is. I can't believe I didn't mention where we are. You mentioned Broad Ripple. I call this Sobro. What is the location?
Yeah, I would call it Sobro. The Monon Station area, that's the little group of buildings that we're in here. It's called the Monon Station. We're right off the Monon Trail, 54th and the Monon.
Mm-hmm. I like the way that you described it to me earlier. But you look out the door and you can see Mama Carolla's.
Correct.
But you're just looking out over the Monon Trail.
Mm-hmm.
On the opposite side of Mama Carolla's.
Yeah. And yeah, I think it helps to say, you know, our front door faces the Monon versus facing 54th. So that gives you a little bit, you know, it's a little out of the way. And I don't want to say out of the way, but it's not visible from the street. But I think once people find it, you know, especially for the coffee, that's really going to be the biggest issue. Mm-hmm. The dinners, people are going to find us. And once you find us, it's not going to be a problem. But, you know, I'm not too worried about it. We got plenty of parking. It really is a pretty easy in and out. So that's the idea.
How much are you investing in this project?
I have about, I'd say when it's all said and done, probably about $140,000, $150,000.
Okay. And are you the sole owner and investor?
I am, yes. I have went to a bank for a loan, but other than that, it's just me.
Do you see this as your primary source of making a living now?
Does this need to work? Yeah, it has to work. Yeah, this is my new job. So, you know, I'd like to ride this one out. You know, recess was the longest one I ever owned at 7 years, so I'd like to see if I can break that record on this one.
So this isn't a hobby. I mean, we shouldn't.
Oh, absolutely not. This is hopefully a well thought out. It's at least thought out. And it's really coming to fruition and coming together just the way I thought it would. Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, this is such a unique business. How do you figure out, I mean, how do you plan ahead financially, like estimate, well, here's how much I can make in a year?
Yeah, I did sort of a real tight pro forma, you know, if I sell this much coffee a day, and I kept it really low, you know, I'm talking 30, 40 cups, you know, which I don't think is too many, any less than that, I probably don't need to be selling coffee.
Yeah.
You know, I think I figured 2 to 3 dinners a week. And I just sort of added up all the things and said, all right, can I make a living at this base, you know, at this very conservative numbers? And I felt like I could, it's not just about money for me either, though. You know, there's so much, you know, I have so much passion for food and I missed it so much. So again, I just have so much gratitude going into it this time and I'm excited for it. And so, yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Greg.
My pleasure.
Hey, best of luck to you.
All right.
And we'll check in here maybe in about a year or so and see how things are going.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, my thanks again to Greg Hardesty. And folks, before you get on with the rest of your week, I want to draw your attention to a couple of stories in this week's edition of IBJ. First up, IBJ's Haley Colombo takes a closer look at the city's 50-year deal that turned over operation of its parking meters, not to mention the majority of the revenue, to a private consortium. We're getting close to the 10th anniversary of the deal, which provides an opportunity to back out if the city wishes. And Haley reports that the revenue estimates for the city were wildly overstated when the deal was signed, and critics say the city can do a lot better on its own. Supporters say it's still a big net positive. Also in this week's issue, John Russell digs into the troubled finances of the Barrington, a 271-unit retirement community in Carmel whose owner has filed for bankruptcy and is deep underwater. Residents typically pay a six-figure refundable entrance fee, and now they're waiting to see whether they'll get their money back. You can read all about it in this week's print edition of IBJ, which you no doubt already have delivered to your home or workplace, and you can find them at IBJ.com. To get full and unfettered access to all of IBJ's award-winning content, just click the subscribe button. As always, thanks for making the podcast a part of your week. I'm Mason King, and we'll be back again next week.